your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this segment, we are going to continue to focus on the resource sector, more or less following up on some of the comments made early on in the first two segments. We're chatting now with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. And Jeff, as much as on our show we talk about kind of the day-to-day fluctuations and some of the shorter-term drivers around the precious metals prices, the CPM Group every year comes out with what they have called the Gold Yearbook. This is a great summary of some of the key issues, more of the high-level issues here, less so of the day-to-day moves, more of where demand's coming from for gold, really across the world. So, Jeff, I want you to give us, please, a little preview into some of the key issues that you guys are outlining in this year's Gold Yearbook for 2021 for gold. What are some of the key issues? Let's start with investment demand. You guys cover that very closely. Where are you seeing investment demand? Where have been some of the big changes here?
Right. I mean, investment demand's the big story. We saw a tremendous growth in net private investment purchases of physical gold this year, or last year in 2020. You know, if you saw about 17, 18 million ounces per year of physical gold purchases on a net global basis in 2018 and 2019. Last year, it was 44 million ounces, which I think is probably the second highest level of annual gold purchases that we've ever seen in the gold market. So, and it was universal. I mean, you saw gold demand in India, China, the Islamic world, Europe, North America. You know, given the pandemic, the economic recession, and all of the political dysfunctionality that we saw worldwide in 2020, the demand for gold was pretty much universal as well. And so we saw a very strong increase last year, and it was continuing into 2021. And one of the things that we talk about in the Gold Yearbook, which is, I think, very interesting, is the nature of the pattern of investment demand has probably changed from 2020 to 2021. In 2020, you had investors chasing the gold price higher as all of these economic and public health issues hit the world. But in 2021, at least in the first quarter, we're seeing a greater price sensitivity. So investors are still wanting to buy a lot of gold. They're still buying a lot of gold, but they're not necessarily pushing the price higher. They're waiting to see how low the price goes before they buy. And you know, we know a lot of our clients, and we had advised them this, and they seem to be doing it. There's a lot of people in the trenches holding their fire until they are, you know, see how low gold prices go. So we're seeing strong demand still this year, but it's not that panicked, let me chase the price higher that we saw last year. It's much more, okay, the price is at record levels, but I still want to buy gold. So that's probably the biggest story that we saw in 2020 that shows up in the Gold Yearbook.
So, Jeff, I've heard of this price sensitivity of gold buyers for quite a while now, over a decade, where it makes sense. Once gold gets up to some of the recent highs, then some of the buyers say, well, it's just a little expensive at these levels. But in your eyes, what sort of demand, or where would the demand come from some sort of investors to push gold past some of these levels, almost take it like a Bitcoin type mania where it brings in maybe new investors? Do you have any insights on this and where some of that investment demand could come from to give gold that extra push past some of these recent higher levels?
I think it'll come from exogenous variables, as we call them. You know, so I think it's going to take something that happens in the global economy or in the financial markets. And right now, I mean, you mentioned the manias, and you've seen the mania in cryptocurrencies. And I think that on a long run basis, that's probably positive for gold, because I do think that at some point there's going to be really devastating losses that are going to be racked up on people who have been putting money into cryptocurrencies. And cryptocurrencies are not investments. Those are speculations. You know, Tesla stock is not an investment at these levels. It's a speculation. And you know, the stock market has seen a tremendous, the inflationary implications of all of the monetary accommodation that we've seen since really 2008 has been in stock values and bond prices. I mean, bond prices are at record levels. Bond yields are rising, but they're still extremely low. They're at historically low levels, even though they've risen 70 basis points for the Treasury bonds so far this year, 10-year Treasuries this year. So you have a lot of bubbles in the financial market, and then not necessarily bubbles that are going to pop, but you have grossly overvalued stock market. You have a grossly overvalued bond market. You have the cryptos, which have actually been a relatively minor thing because they've only distracted maybe $1 trillion of wealth at the most, compared to the hundreds of trillions, if not quadrillions of dollars that have gone into the stock market and the bond market over the last year or two. You know, so you have a lot of issues of overvalued assets. And right now, you know, gold, some people would argue that gold is overvalued at $1,724 as we speak. But gold is seen as relatively cheap compared to all these other assets. So I think that one of the things that you'll see is there'll be some triggering event, probably in the interest rate market, that's going to cause a revaluation downward in stocks and other assets. And when that happens, I think gold goes up. I think that that's one of the areas we're looking at. We're also looking at, you know, the political dysfunctionality in the United States, in England. You're seeing the problems that Brexit is causing with commerce between Europe and the United Kingdom. You have increased tensions between the U.S. and China, increased tensions between Russia and the United States. You know, you always have to worry when someone like Putin wishes you good health. It's like, I guess I shouldn't have said that.
Jeff, let me take it over here, buddy. I see what you're saying, though. A lot of potentially very positive drivers for the precious metals, really all getting people to kind of reassess some of these valuations that markets and other assets are trading at. What about central banks? We talk a lot about central banks' monetary policy, but they also play a big role in the metals market. Where has their demand stood?
Yeah, that's one of the other big stories that shows up in our gold yearbook. You know, central banks are, you know, we divide the gold market into total supply, fabrication demand, and then stock demand. And stock demand is primarily investment demand, but it's also central banks. And central banks are more price sensitive than investors. Investors, private investors will, like I said, you know, drive the price higher and chase the price higher at times. But central banks tend to wait for lower prices. So if you look at central bank purchases, when the gold price was falling 2014, 15, central banks were buying additional amounts of gold, you know, 10, 15, 20 million ounces of gold. When the price started to rise in 2016, 2017, they pulled back. When investors pulled back in 2018, 2019, and the gold price kind of went flat for a while, central banks stepped up and they were bought. I think they probably bought about 18 or 19 million ounces of gold in 2019. Last year, investors came back into the market gangbusters, drove the price to record levels, and central banks bought on total, on net, about 7 million ounces. So central bank gold demand last year was less than half of what it had been in 2019. And if you look at it, you know, Russia stopped buying, China hasn't bought since late 2019. Kazakhstan actually was a net seller for most of the first three quarters of the last year. They bought some back at the end of the year and turned positive. But you had a lot of central banks not buying. And the big central bank of that 7 million ounces, something like 4+ million ounces was Turkey. And the Turkish central bank gold purchases are interesting because they're an outlier, you know. But, you know, you have two stories in central banks. One is central banks as a group bought a lot less gold because they're price sensitive. And as the price rose, they simply said, yeah, I want to buy gold, but A, I'm kind of distracted with everything else going on in the global recession and monetary accommodation and trying to keep my country afloat. And B, I'm not going to buy at these high prices. I'm going to wait. The other story was Turkey. And what Turkey was doing is it created in 2017, and it became very important last year, Turkey has a gold bond program and a gold leasing program in which people who own physical gold in Turkey can buy bonds, government bonds, or lease their gold to the government and earn interest. And, you know, Turkey had the pandemic, they had the lockdown, they had the economic recession, they had political dysfunctionality, they had a civil war in Syria on their southern border, they have the Kurds causing issues for the Turkish government, they have a very nasty relationship with Russia ever since they shot down that bomber jet and then somebody blew up the Istanbul airport, never took credit for it, but, you know, probably wished them good health. They have sanctions from the U.S. They have sanctions from Europe, their major trading partners. So they have a lot of problems. And what the Turkish Central Bank did was they said, look, you can turn in your gold to a commercial bank and get a government bond, and then you can use that government bond to raise Turkish lira to live. And then if you get on your feet again, you can redeem that bond and get the gold back at a, you know, slight discount that really reflects the transaction cost. So you don't have to be in a situation where most gold investors in most parts of the world are, which is, I need money, I have to sell my gold. I sell my gold, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. The gold price rises, and when I have money again and I want to rebuild my gold investments, the price is much higher. But with the Turkish bonds and with the lease arrangements, you go back to the government and you buy gold at the price that you sold it to them. Or lent it to them, rather, you know, and so is a really smart thing. And Turkey does this, the Reserve Bank of India does it, and for some strange reason, other central banks around the world don't do it yet.
So then clarify for us how precious metals play into some of the other central banks outside of Turkey and India. How do precious metals play into the central bank strategy when it comes to monetary policy?
Yeah, okay, well, let's set Russia and Kazakhstan aside for a second. Most central banks look at gold as a reserve asset, and they don't necessarily see it factoring into monetary policy or current things. What they see is, okay, we have reserve assets, mostly currencies. You know, the vast majority of central banks' monetary reserves are other countries' currencies, and they use that for international trade settlement and capital flows. And then they have some gold, and they use that gold as a diversification. Most of the central bank gold is held by central banks that accumulated the gold in the 50s and 60s when gold was used for international trade settlements. But you have other central banks like Russia and China and India that were not necessarily major international trading partners back during the gold standard days. They don't have a lot of gold, so they're adding gold to diversify their portfolio. Russia's kind of a special issue because it's Russia, and they have issues with the United States and Europe, and they're kind of paranoid about us with good reasons. We don't like them. We've done nasty things to them over the years. They've done nasty things to us. So Russia is sort of a pariah state, and it says, okay, look, most of our foreign exchange earnings are natural resources, oil and gas, aluminum, nickel, palladium exports. Almost all of that comes in payments in U.S. dollars. The U.S. government hates us. We hate them. So as we get dollars in, we're going to use those dollars to buy gold. And we're going to have as much of our reserves in gold as possible because we really don't want to have a lot of reserves in dollars. I mean, if you go back overall, central bank foreign exchange reserves, 62% of those reserves are in U.S. dollars. Yeah, so that's where most monetary reserves are, U.S. dollars. And Russia, and to some extent, its satellite partners, you know, like Kazakhstan and Belarus, say, you know, yeah, we're kind of a little bit hesitant about having so much of our monetary reserves in U.S. dollars because they don't like us. So we're going to put it into euros, we're going to put it into other currencies, and we're going to put it into gold. So most central banks, with the exception of India and Turkey, most central banks just see gold as a monetary reserve asset. They don't necessarily see it as an instrument that can be used for monetary policies.
Okay. Well, that clears up a fair bit, I think. And we all need to understand the way central banks are viewing precious metals. Let's wrap it up with a quick comment on ETF demand. This is also critical to understand, but I think there is a little bit of misinformation. It's not as cut and dry when you look at some of the underlying ETF holdings in terms of how that relates to investor demand. Can you break that down for us, please?
Yeah. Well, you know, bullion banks have always been involved in ETFs in some marginal way. And in the Gold Yearbook, we talk about how, you know, our view was that mostly what you saw up until 2020 was that bullion banks used the outstanding shares of ETFs for hedging purposes, by and large. But over the course of 2020, one of the things that was happening was that some of the major bullion banks were either closing their bullion desks or scaling them back dramatically. And, you know, senior management said, we want to reduce our exposure to precious metals. As that was happening, you had a lot of gold and silver being sold to bullion banks by investors and others to raise cash, or because to take advantage of the higher prices, or other reasons. So as a result, you had gold and silver inventories held by these bullion banks at record levels. And then senior management comes along and says, look, we told you to reduce our exposure to precious metals, not to build it up to record levels. So what you saw last year, in the middle part of the year, second and third quarters, was some of these bullion banks selling gold and silver bullion, physical metal, buying ETF shares. And then the ETF shares, their equities, so they get transferred to the equity trading desk away from the bullion desk. And that helps the bank overall reduce its exposure to the bullion trading operation. So you saw a lot, you know, 30 million ounces of gold ETFs, 300 plus million ounces of silver ETFs last year. A lot of people looked at that and said, that must be just tremendous historically high levels of investment demand. And a lot of it was investment demand, but some portion that's not disclosed by anybody was not investors buying ETFs, but rather these bullion banks buying the ETF shares and transferring them to the equity desks. Then, starting in the fourth quarter, you saw gold ETF redemptions. That's continued in the first quarter of this year, and you're seeing some silver ETF redemptions too. That does not necessarily represent investor selling. That could be, and seems likely to us, to be the equity trading desks of those banks taking the opportunity of relatively high prices to sell off their shares. So we think that, you know, yeah, clearly investors bought a lot of ETFs last year, but we think that the volumes of purchases and any subsequent sales probably have been distorted by the fact that you had these bullion banks doing this, and no one's reporting the data. No, you know, no one steps up and says, yeah, that's what we did. And there's no regulations or other issues that require that kind of disclosure. But we think that if people are just looking at the ETFs and assuming that all of the purchases and all of the sales are investors, they're probably overestimating the purchases and overestimating any sales that we might have seen in the last 6 months in gold and the last 3 months in silver.
All right. So then, Jeff, summarize then. Where do you see general investment demand for the precious metals after a very good year last year? However, the tail end of the year, we've been fading in terms of the gold price this year as well. Where does demand lie currently?
We think that it's a little bit lower than last year. And as I said, we thought about 44 million ounces last year. We're projecting about 40, 42 million ounces this year, based on where we are at the end of or the middle of March. You know, we've seen a pretty strong demand actually in January and in the first quarter. Our expectation is that the gold price kind of treads water in the second and third quarters, and that is a time when a lot of investors will then say, okay, I think that this is base building period, and this is where I'm going to start buying gold again. So we think that you're going to see strong investment demand in the second and third quarters, assuming that the prices sort of move sideways during that period of time. And then in the fourth quarter, we think that you'll start seeing some seasonal increase in investment demand. So we're looking for a strong investment demand again this year, and consequently, we're looking for strong prices too, especially in the fourth quarter.
Okay. Jeff, we're going to wrap it up there. It's always great having you on the show, buddy. I appreciate all of your insights, and I hope that everyone who is invested in the metals sector understands some of these key issues for gold when it comes to investment demand from some of the largest players in the area. Jeff, great chatting with you, buddy. We will chat again in another few weeks. I hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Take care.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.